The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you, when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fuck them protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city, and they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up, and that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Greetings and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is October the 6th, 2015, and I hope my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines. Today, we do want to talk about some news items that I came across today that I thought was important, that should be disseminated, information that should be disseminated. But before I tell you what's on the agenda for today, we will only be on air for an hour today. If we happen to need to go over the hour, we will do so. But coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. today, there will be a broadcast of Tando Radio Show. If you have a question or a comment, some news that you would like to report that you think is important and people need to know about, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. That again is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. That's 549032#. For those already dialed in, or once you dial in, you can just hit *61 and that'll signal me and I will bring you on air. For those who are not within the borders of the United States of America, USA Inc., and or you don't have any long distance service, well, if you have access to a computer, you can just use the flash phone that is embedded on today's broadcast page or on the main profile page for this program. Just click on the button that says call the show, and long as you got a pair of headsets, you can connect with us. Now, let's talk about what's in the news today. Well, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says that she doesn't believe that police departments should be required to report how many people they have killed. Now, I want to know why. And she gave us an answer. And she said it's because some police departments are too small. Like, they're too small. They don't have enough manpower to keep up with all the people that they're killing. So, you know, I'm not going to co-sign on to requiring police to report how many people they are killing behind these enemy lines. So I'm not buying that. I don't know about you. Do you see any logic in her statement? Do you accept that? I don't, but that's me. Maybe you can convince me otherwise. But also on a separate issue, she also talked about states' rights in terms of cannabis legalization. We're talking about weed. She said that she supports their right to legalize cannabis. So we'll hear from her. We'll play a clip and hear from her. The other story that I think is important is about the book publishing giant McGraw-Hill. which was taken to task by a mother in Texas after her son alerted her that the textbook that they published called World Geography, in the section which is titled Patterns of Immigration, the Transatlantic Human Trafficking of Africans, was considered immigration, or at least that's how they tried to paint it as immigration. And enslaved Africans were just immigrants, and they were workers. They came in to work, and yeah, that's what they put in this textbook. And again, McGraw-Hill is one of the largest publishers in the United States that's publishing school textbooks. So we definitely want to talk about that. The mother's name is Ronnie Dean Burren. She took to YouTube and she called out the book and McGraw-Hill. And McGraw-Hill agreed to make some changes. However, in my opinion, the damage is already done. You got possibly millions, you know, millions of textbooks already out there that they are not going to recall them textbooks and say, you know, we made a egregious error, and we don't think that anyone should have this book because of this egregious error. And so, yeah, we're going to recall them, and we'll get you some new textbooks. No, they're not calling for that. And so the damage is already done. So, I mean, it's great that they're going to make those changes to the world geography, the section titled Patterns of Immigration. But guess what? A lot of the textbooks, so-called history textbooks in the United States, are filled with white supremacy lies. Some of the lies I did not discover until I was like well into my 40s, and coming across information because I was researching like my own family history and researching the history of North Carolina, which led me to, you know, connect it to the revolution, because you had a whole bunch of free Africans here in North Carolina that participated in the revolution and whatnot. And so, just from my own reading, I have discovered that when I was in the school system, I was taught a whole bunch of white supremacy lies. And so I feel like those books should be, redone. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And so I got some comments, some other comments that I like to make in regards to this story. The rain has stopped in South Carolina. I think the name of that hurricane was Joe Kim or something like that. I'm not sure. But there was a hurricane that hit South Carolina and other parts of the planet. I believe also in the Caribbean and whatnot. I'm thinking of one place, Bermuda. Yeah, Bermuda, because we have a couple of listeners that tune in from the Bermuda Islands, and they got hit pretty hard. But South Carolina really got hit hard. And while the rain has stopped, the danger for residents remain. You got roads and bridges being washed out, and you got dams that's breaking. And I bet a lot of you would be surprised to learn that a lot of the infrastructure in the United States of America is almost 100 years old. And I know this to be the case because I used to do construction work, and I was, you know, learned pretty fast, and I got a promotion to a bridge crew and went to Georgia to work on a bridge. And that bridge was like built in the 1930s. That's like, man, that's like 89 years ago. So think about this. While the United States allocates billions, and if we want to talk about over time, like decades, trillions of dollars they have given in the form of aid to other countries, while its own infrastructure is just, it appears, a storm away from being destroyed. So does the United States, this is the question I have, is does the United States need to implement a massive rebuilding effort for its infrastructure that would in turn create millions of jobs? And I've heard several people talk about that. And so those are some of the things that's on tap to discuss in the next 50 minutes. Again, if you have a question or a comment, please don't hesitate to get it in. You can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#, and of course it's *61. to signal me your host. The other way to get in is to give me a call on the studio line, which is 704. Let me make sure it's open. Yes, it is. 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. So, Attorney General, the Attorney General Loretta Lynch, I heard her brother Dave yesterday on Tando Radio Show say that, you know, a lot of black folks is looking at her like she's Auntie Loretta. And, you know, he was just saying don't trust these proxy tools of racism, man. They're tools of the system. And, you know, they have a role to play. So anyway. She said that the government should not be required to report the number of people killed by police. Now, she was talking to this guy. I don't really like him too much, but NBC journalist Chuck Todd. She was talking to him about criminal justice issues. And she said last Thursday that she does not support a federal mandate to report people killed by police. So let me cue up a clip from her comments so that you can hear them for yourself. So this is Loretta Lynch, again, speaking to NBC corporate media host Chuck Todd.
Attorney General Loretta Lynch is getting pushback on her remarks, saying there is no need for a federal mandate to require police departments to report instances of officers discharging their weapons. Here's what she says at the Washington Ideas Forum on Thursday.
You know, I think one of the things we're focusing on with the Department of Justice is not trying to reach down from Washington and dictate to every local department how they should handle the minutiae of record keeping. But we are stressing to them that these records must be kept. A lot of times it's a resource issue for small departments. You know, the average size of a police department in this country is around 55 people.
Right.
You know, a lot of them are very small, and municipalities are challenged. This is not to say, not to excuse not doing this, because it is, in fact, a very important tool for tracking these interactions. So we encourage it. And we also are looking to encourage consistency of standards. As you've pointed out, you can get information from one department, but if you can't match it up or marry it up to other information, it may not give you a true picture. But the real issues here, Chuck, I mean, the statistics are important,
right,
but the real issues are what steps are we all taking to connect communities that often feel disenfranchised and disaffected with the police and back with government?
Attorney General's stance varies from that of her predecessor, Eric Holder, who called for the collection of data as the first step to improving race relations between police and communities. FBI Director James Comey also weighed in on a reporting mandate, saying, quote, "I don't have the power to require people to supply us with data. I'm just talking about it constantly to state and local law enforcement, saying this is in everyone's interest who cares about sound policing, sound public policy, and to use the bully pulpit of this office. Those are the tools I have," unquote.
All right, that was Roland Martin of News One that you heard there, and I have also linked to that video, so that it was like 15 minutes long. Couple of people that I know were on there. Cleo Monago is one. He's on that panel. He's a regular panelist on Roland Martin's program on News One. So you could check out what they had to say. But this is what I got to say. I think she is, first of all, Loretta Lynch has always been pro-police. Now, of course, she can't be anti-police, being that she's a U.S. Attorney General, and before that she was a state attorney. No, she was a federal prosecutor. Yeah, she was a federal prosecutor. So, of course, we ain't calling for her to be anti-police or anything like that. But at the same time, I feel like you have to be objective. And she has a history of always, you know, siding with the police. And, you know, I guess when you work in that field that, you know, that's how you make it to the top. That's how you become the top cop in the United States is, you know, you got to play for the home team and whatnot. So it feels like to me that she's going against what her predecessor, Attorney General Eric Holder, has said, saying that there should be a mandate for keeping track of these stats. One stat in particular, how many people are being killed by police? And so then you heard them mention FBI. You heard Roland mention FBI Director James Comey saying pretty much the same thing. He's saying, I don't have the power to force them to do it. And of course, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the power to force them to keep these records and report to the FBI because I think it was 1994, I could be mistaken, it was during the Bill Clinton administration where they passed a law, which is ridiculous. They passed a law that said that we recommend police report to us how many people they are killing out here in these streets. I mean, why would you even put that in a law? Because it don't require them to do anything. I mean, it doesn't require, there's no penalty if they don't report it. They don't get any of the federal funds that they get to lock people up over nonviolent, victimless drug crimes. They, you know, to hunt down immigrants and whatnot. No, no, you know, there is no punishment. There is no repercussion. So why would you even pass such a thing, you know? And so he said, but I try to use my bully pulpit, and I'm always talking to them about needing to keep these statistics, to keep these records. So you got Attorney General Loretta Lynch going against Attorney General Eric Holder and James Comey, the FBI director. And you got to ask yourself why. And I think I already laid out why. Because she's pro-police, always has been so. All right. Okay, now, I'm not buying this excuse about manpower, lack of manpower that many of these departments is, they only got 55, you know, people and blah, 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 and, you know, we don't want to bog them down in minutia. And I'll take offense to referring to the killing of people and recording those killings as minutia. That's, I mean, we're talking about lives here. We ain't talking about no inanimate objects. We're talking about lives. We ain't talking about how many squirrels they run over with the car. We ain't talking about how many dogs they kill or anything like that. No, we talking about human beings. We talking about real live people. So how could you even say something like that? Keeping records like that is minutia. You know, that's just incorrect language on her part, but I am not buying the excuse. Now, I don't live in a town. I don't live in a city. I live in an unincorporated rural area. Do we have police? Yes, we do. We got the Gaston County police, but I do live right in between two small towns of Stanley, North Carolina and Mount Holly, North Carolina. I think Mount Holly has about maybe, shoot, if I count the cops, I would just give an estimate of probably about 15 people because they really don't have a whole lot of cops. The police department isn't, you know, this huge building and whatnot. It's just a little small town police force. I cannot tell you, I do not recall in my life that I have lived here. You know, I was born here, but I left and went to Detroit. Then, you know, my mom brought me back down here and to our homeland. And I cannot recall at any time the Mount Holly Police Department killing anyone. I can't recall the Stanley Police Department killing anyone. So it's not like these smaller police departments are having like 10 people killed a year, 20 people killed a year. I mean, if they were, I mean, really, the problem is bigger than what we thought. If that was going on at these little small police departments and whatnot. So being that, and I'm just using, you know, Mount Holly or Stanley as an example, how, you know, difficult would it be to keep track of people that they're killing, considering they ain't killing that many people? So saying that it's a small police department. Now, let me ask you this. Don't they report crime statistics to the FBI? Isn't that how the FBI collects data on how many citizens is, quote unquote, committing crimes and what type of crimes and things of that nature? Certainly they do. So how difficult is it to then also include in those statistics how many people have been killed by one of your officers. It wouldn't take a whole lot, people, okay? It wouldn't take a whole lot. I have worked in corporate America, two different large corporations. I worked in management where it involved record keeping. My last duty station when I was in the United States military, I worked in the S3, and that is like, at training, battalion training level. So I had to keep a lot of records on all the different soldiers. I think we had about 800 to 1,000 people in, a battalion. And I had to keep records of all their scores and, you know, when they went to take their skills qualification tests, which they have to do every year to test, you know, for their job skill and make sure that they know what they're doing and whatnot. I had to schedule them. I had to record their scores. I had to enter them into a database. And I mean, it wasn't that difficult, man. It's not like, you know, we had 5 or 6 of them needed to be tested a day and whatnot. It was not that difficult. And so I am not buying the attorney general's excuse that, you know, we just don't want to bog down these police departments because they, you know, some of them only got 55 people working for them. Well, hire some extra people then. If it's that difficult, which I am asserting, it is not difficult to keep those records. All right. And we do have citizen kept databases, which are just an estimate based off of news media reports. You know, putting in, doing stuff like, what do they call that? I'm sorry, where you can get news alerts. You can like put in your keywords and, you know, Google News Alerts, something like that. But anyway, you can put in these keywords and it'll send you articles on everything that contains those keywords. So if you put in there like killed by police or police shooting or police killing or officer involved shooting, then you're going to get articles of that have been published worldwide, of how many people police are killing. But again, those are only rough estimates because you're relying on the media to report, to gather the statistics. Well, hell, they may not know about it depending upon how large that news media organization is and whether or not, you know, they want to work with the police because they do have very tight knit relationships with police, and that is why you are always getting the police version of events from most news reports, especially if it's the initial report. All they'll do is go to the police department and go to their press officer and get the press release and republish it. Or they might add, you know, some of their own commentary, but they're getting the so-called facts from the police, and you can't trust them all the time. You know, they lie a lot all the time. I would say a whole lot. So we are not talking about some monumental task. One person could file a report of how many people were killed by officers at that department. So Loretta Lynch needs to come off of that BS that she pushing out there. That's just BS, people. The logic does not fit. It's illogical for her to say something like that. And there should be a law, but it's going to have to go through Congress. So good luck there. I'm not saying don't do it. You know, for those who work on such things, you know, if that's your area that you're working in. Although, you know, a lot of us feel like, you know, the political game is just that. It's a game, you know, that voting doesn't matter that much. It might matter on the local level, but when you're talking about the federal government, you know, they got so many lobbyists that they, are beholden to because of the cash that they bringing into their campaigns to help them get reelected. Then, you know, good luck. Good luck. Police unions are very, very strong. And again, why wouldn't police want to provide those statistics if everything is above board? If there is no shenanigans going on, if you're doing things by the books, if these are indeed all justifiable homicides, then you shouldn't have a problem reporting that. You shouldn't have a problem reporting that. And so I have also linked for you to one of those citizen databases, Killed by Police 2015. All right. You can find it at killedbypolice.net, where, again, as I stated earlier, where they are keeping a citizen's database based off of news reports. And so, again, this is just the estimate. This is not a hard number. This is the least amount of people that they have killed. And I would say that they have killed far more, because we're getting all these acknowledgments that they're not reporting. They're not reporting like they should. So the latest tally as of October the 5th, thankfully ain't nobody been killed today thus far, or at least we don't know about that we know about. But according to killedbypolice.net, as of October the 5th, 2015, 907 people have been killed by police. The unlucky number 907 was Rodney Genesic, 50 years old, out of New Jersey, a white male. All right. So what is it? October, November? We got two more months left, man. We got two more months left. Well, actually three, because we're just in the beginning of October. So that's October, November, December. I think they're averaging about 100 per month. So we could well be looking at 1,400 to 1,500 people killed by police that we know about. Again, because this is a citizen kept database. This isn't, you know, something that's being produced by the federal government or anything like that. Speaking of the federal government, I guess this is something people could push at the state level as well. You know, get some legislation passed in your state that requires, these people to track how many people they are killing, and get these killer cops out here, scrutinized. All right. So I think they're hiding the numbers. I think that people like Loretta Lynch don't want an accurate count. Because then that just gives human rights advocates ammunition to go to the United Nations, to these different conferences on human rights, to petition the UN, to do something, anything, you know, in terms of all of these human rights being violated here in the United States. I was just looking at a petition today that someone shared on Facebook, but I had signed it like months ago. But they were charging the United States of America, USA, Inc., with genocide. I also gotten some information. I haven't had time to go over it yet, but Reverend Daniel Buford, who has been a guest speaker on Race Treaty Radio, which comes on Friday nights at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, on Black Talk Radio Network, and he has been to the UN and he has presented cases before, and he sent some information to me about a draft petition that he's working on, and he's talking about all of the people we can verify that were unarmed when they were killed by police. So I don't know about you, but I am not buying anything that Loretta Lynch is selling in terms of police departments just don't have the resources to keep track of how many people they're killing, damn it. I mean, you can keep track of how many citizens are killing other citizens. Certainly you, because you shouldn't be killing more than the citizens, right? Law enforcement, they should not be engaged in that much killing. So they should be killing as a last resort, right? But now often it's not a last resort. It's the first resort. That's the first thing that they do. Like we saw that man, get gunned down in his wheelchair by that firing line. I think that was, I can't remember. It happens so often. I can't keep up with them all. I mean, man, it's a lot of people being killed, by these police. Yeah. Certainly they shouldn't be involved in that much killing that they can't keep track of how many people that they killing. So Loretta Lynch, We're not buying that. We're not buying that excuse. All right, we're going to take a station identification break, and then when we come back, we will talk about the second story concerning Loretta Lynch, where she does say something that's worthwhile. There she is using logic in this statement on states' rights and the legalization of cannabis. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
They use force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I lost my career. I lost financially. It was devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I fear for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Again, today's date is October the 6th. October the 6th, 2015. So, the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch did say something worthwhile while she was speaking to Chuck Todd, that I think she was being truthful in her statements. And I don't have the audio on that, but I do have a article from theweedblog.com. That is theweedblog.com. I've also linked to the story for those that want to check it out for themselves. Unless you have, it was written by Johnny Green, on October the 4th. He says that unless you have lived under a rock your whole life, then you are aware that the federal government considers marijuana to be illegal in all forms. You also know that some states have legalized marijuana in medical and recreational form. This, of course, has led to a lot of issues and tension between the feds and the states. The Obama administration has issued some limited policy changes that has resulted in less intervention in states that have legalized. Has the Obama administration gone far enough? Of course not. There is still a lot that needs to be done, but things could certainly be worse. The Obama administration seems to at least be open to states legalizing marijuana, provided that a lot of issues are mitigated. A member of Obama's cabinet, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, echoed that stance this last week when she did an interview for NBC. Again, that's the same interview we played earlier with Chuck Todd. Per an article that legendary activist Tom Angel posted on marijuana.com, the nation, and this is a quote, "The nation's top cop thinks states should be allowed to legalize marijuana, but believes the federal government has a role to play in keeping cannabis away from kids and stopping interstate trafficking in the drug. I think states have to make those decisions on their own," she said. "They listen to their citizens and they take actions." Again, this was Loretta Lynch speaking in that interview with NBC's Chuck Todd, and that was last Thursday. She went on to say, "What we have said and what we continue to say is that states have to also have a system designed to, number one, mitigate violence associated with their marijuana industries, and number two, and perhaps most importantly, keep young people, children, away from the product." So I'll leave it there. You can read the rest of the article. Again, this is on theweedblog.com. Listen. Once you have legalized cannabis, I choose to call it cannabis because marijuana is a term that has racist roots. When they were trying to demonize Mexicans and whatnot and, you know, Mexican immigrants and saying they are crazy and out their mind smoking that loco weed and whatnot. So that it has some, racist connotations to it. I choose not to use it, but I've read it from the article. But anyway, when you have legalized cannabis, I'm not seeing any violence associated with any of those shops in Colorado, in Washington, legalized in, medicinal is legalized in California, I believe. I haven't heard about a spike in violence in Alaska, Oregon also recently, legalized cannabis for recreational use. I mean, there are a number of states. There are too many for me to name on this program that have legalized cannabis in one form or fashion. And there I have not heard any stories or seen any stories about this cannabis dispensary was robbed last night. Oh, yeah, I take that back. I did read a story about a cannabis dispensary being robbed in California. It was robbed by the cops who were caught on video putting stuff in their pockets and eating the cannabis cookies and whatnot. And yeah, the cops, I have read stories, but I haven't heard about any stick up kids or masked men or women running up into these shops and robbing them. So again, and this woman appears to have a habit of making illogical statements. There's no violence associated with legalized cannabis industry. None that I have seen. And I'm sure if there was, that all of these anti-cannabis people, pro-drug war people that want to see people continue to be enslaved over victimless crimes, I'm sure they will be telling us about it. We'll be hearing about it from them. They'll be on NBC talking to Chuck Todd, talking about, see, just look at these violent people. No, the violence is associated with the underground drug market, the cartels. All right. The cartels who are fighting and the gangs who are fighting each other over territory, over market share. That's where the violence is associated with. But when something is legalized, I don't see, for example, I don't see any bars. I don't see any bar owners robbing people and, you know, people that, you know, dispense alcohol. I don't see them going out robbing beer trucks and things of that nature to keep their, you know, beer on tap and whatnot and trying to save money. So they're hijacking and robbing beer trucks and all that kind of stuff. I don't see any violence going on associated with the legal, alcohol industry. None whatsoever. They are not in the streets. Bar owners are not in the streets gunning down each other over territory in a battle for customers and things of that nature. So again, that's just illogical for her to say. So I take back what I said about she said something sensible. I mean, she is sensible in saying that, you know, states should have the right to legalize. The citizens should have a right to legalize cannabis if they want to. And then, you know, her second point, which she says is most important, is keeping young people and children away from the products. Well, guess what? When you allow cannabis to be illegal and therefore maintaining the street market for it, then guess what? Some drug dealers out there are not so, you know, they don't have morals. They don't have ethics. They not that ethical that they're going to be carding young people that's coming to them to get a dime bag of weed or, you know, whatever. No. They are going to sell it. They're going to get them Benjamins, as they say. It's all about the Benjamins, right? So if you want to keep young people away from these products, number one, you need to legalize. You need to legalize, and then that way you can destroy the street market. Now, there are always going to be some people that still going to be selling it illegally, just like, you know, there are, I can't tell you how many, but on the very road that I live on, there used to be what we call a hole in the wall, a juke joint or whatnot that sold beer and sold liquor and White Lightning and all that kind of, had jukebox in there, had pool tables in there and whatnot. And this was an unlicensed club. Okay. But we live in an unincorporated area and, you know, ain't nobody snitching and stuff like that. So, you know, long as there wasn't nobody getting shot, then they stayed in business. Well, I don't know why they went out of business. The guy who used to run it, he's still around. Maybe he made a change in his life or something. I see him going to the church next door, just about every Sunday now. So maybe he said, look, I'm not going to do that no more. I'm not going to operate a juke joint no more selling alcohol illegally. So they're always going to be, you know, I don't want to sit up here and lie to you and say if you legalize cannabis, you're going to eliminate the street market. But what you're going to do is drastically cut down on the street market, because who wants to go? Who wants to go to a drug house to purchase drugs when they could go to a licensed establishment that's legal and what? They ain't got to worry about a raid. They ain't got to worry about being robbed or seeing something, getting caught up in some nonsense and whatnot. They just go to the dispensary. So, yeah. She's concerned about that. She needs to get fully behind legalization. So, yeah, that's all I got to say about that. Loretta Lynch is really, I just can't call it with this woman. Again, I know she's a tool of racism. I know what you have to do. You have to compromise and whatnot to make it in this system and whatnot. But still, I'm one of those people who I just say, don't cooperate, man. Don't cooperate. Always be truthful. Always tell the truth. Let's tell the facts and let's not, you know, deal in propaganda. Let's make our comments based on logic, not on illogical mess and garbage. So, yeah, that's that story. As I told you, the other story, you got book publishing giant McGraw-Hill being taken to task or was taken to task by a mother in Texas after her son alerted her that the textbook World Geography in the section titled Patterns of Immigration, the Transatlantic Human Trafficking Trade of Africans, was considered immigration in this book. And they also refer to enslaved Africans as workers. So Ronnie Dean Burin, she took to YouTube to call the book out. So I got a clip that I want to play. We'll probably hear from her as well, but I want to play this clip from this random news source.
A major publishing company is apologizing to a local mother about how that company portrayed slavery in a book used by local students. Eyewitness News reporter Caitlin McCulley is live at Pearland High School tonight to show us what that mother found in the textbook and what the publisher is promising to do about it. Caitlin?
Hey, Tom. A ninth grader here at Pearland High School opened up his textbook to read a passage about immigration. What he found was pretty shocking to him and his mother.
So he has a copy of the book at home.
Ronnie Dean Burin shared this cell phone video on social media.
This is a part of the Texas textbook adoption.
After her son, Kobe, texted her about an alarming passage in his textbook.
About Africans coming over as workers.
Kobe sent her this image, which reads,
"The Atlantic slave trade between the 1500s and the 1800s brought millions of workers from Africa to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations."
That map is under a section heading called Patterns of Immigration.
Immigrants. Yeah. That word matters.
In the next section, the text mentions English and European people,
many of whom came as indentured servants to work for little or no pay. So they say that about English and European people, but there is no mention of Africans working as slaves or being slaves. It just says we were workers.
Dean Burin contacted the publisher, McGraw-Hill, to express her concerns. The company responded on Facebook, saying in part, We conducted a close review of the content and agreed that our language in that caption did not adequately convey that Africans were both forced into migration and to labor against their will as slaves. We believe we can do better. The company has agreed to change the digital version of the book immediately and will correct the text in the next printing of this particular book. Dean Burin was thrilled to get such a quick response from McGraw-Hill, posting on social media, "This has changed, people. This is why your voices matter." She encourages other students and parents to speak up. And since we posted this story on our Facebook page, many of you have responded saying things like, "Good for you, Texas mom. Thanks for calling them out." And now that Texas mom is out of town today, coincidentally at an academic conference. We hope to catch up with her tomorrow to talk more in depth about this story. For now, we're live in Pearland. Caitlin McCauley, 13 Eyewitness News.
All right. So that was that report. And this is what I noticed. I don't think that it's as an egregious offense as it's being made out to be. Because context is everything. Now, let me read that passage to you again. Now, she's saying that they're being called immigrants, right? But actually, they're not being called immigrants. They are being called workers, but what are slaves? And I hate calling people slaves, but workers. That's where they're enslaved so that they can work, right? So I don't think it's incorrect to call them workers. Now, it never said that they immigrated to the United States. This is what the passage reads. And pay attention to the words. The Atlantic slave trade between the 1500s and the 1800s brought millions of workers from Africa to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations. Now, if you saying that they were brought here part of the Atlantic slave trade, then wow. I mean, is it incorrect to assume that they are slaves? Now I do take issue with this part. They weren't just sent to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations. You had enslaved Africans all over the country. And, you know, USA Inc. didn't even exist in the 1500s. So you had enslaved Africans all over this continent, not just working in the South. Where was Wall Street? Wall Street was set up to do what? To facilitate the trade of enslaved Africans, right? Wall Street. Where's Wall Street? It's in New York, ain't it? New York City. That's not in the South. I wouldn't say that Massachusetts is in the South. That's not the South. Boston, Mass., that's not in the South. So, again, you know, we getting incorrect history all the time. All the time. And that kind of stuff matters. Now, I don't agree with her that they were calling these immigrants. The section patterns of immigration, yeah, that's misleading, but they tell you that these people were brought here during the Atlantic slave trade between the 1500s and the 1800s. The only incorrect thing that they state is that they were brought from Africa to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations. Now, the bulk of them were in the South working on, you know, tobacco plantations, cotton, you know, just agriculture, period. Down in South Carolina doing the rice, you know, harvesting rice and stuff. They got a lot of people from West Africa who were skilled in growing rice all throughout South Carolina. That's where the Gullah Geechee people. But I think that she's incorrect in this respect. They said it was the Atlantic slave trade. Now, they didn't call them in that passage immigrants. It didn't say that. It said workers. What are slaves? Well, slaves are workers. Why didn't she point out, or does she not know that People were enslaved all over this continent. All over it. I remember our brother Michael Cord up there in Philadelphia, avenging with the organization Avenging the Ancestors. You know, I interviewed him years ago when they found those bodies of those enslaved Africans buried near the under the president's house or near the president's house. The president's house, the first so-called White House, was in Philadelphia. That's where George Washington was smuggling in slaves and smuggling them out, because in Pennsylvania there was a law. If you brought a enslaved person here, they stayed here 6 months, they became free. So short of the 6 months, George Washington would ship them back to Virginia so that they wouldn't become free. That ain't the South. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is not in the South. So, I mean, that's incorrect right there, that, you know, a lot of people just want to accept this narrative that only the South was enslaving people, when that's a lie. The history does not support that. The real history does not support that. Now, she also noted in another section of the book, it clearly states that many European immigrants were indentured servants who worked for little or no pay. That's incorrect. If you were an indentured servant, a slave, cause actually that's how they try to pretty it up. Prior to Bacon's rebellion, white people, these immigrants, they weren't even classified as white. The Irish, the Scots, and the poor whites, they didn't, you know, have money or whatnot, were begging in the streets of London and whatnot, and being arrested for it, committing other petty crimes of survival. They didn't immigrate. Immigration means I migrated somewhere on my own, of my own free will. If I've been locked up and I've been sentenced to hard labor in the new world, to toil the land for 7 years until my sentence is up, I'm not an immigrant. I'm a prison slave. That's what the hell I am. I may not be in a physical prison, but I am being chained up so I don't run away. I'm being chained up in the barn or wherever. So that indentured servitude stuff, no, them people were slaves. They were enslaved until after Bacon's rebellion, and that's how the term white was invented. The Jeffrey P. Perry, I think that's his name, I'm not sure, but there's a lecture that we play here on the network, and I do need to change out some of them lectures. I'll do that. But how the invention of the white race is based on a book that was written, and it talks about after Bacon's rebellion, how the English, you know, the aristocracy then made a deal with the Irish and the other, you know, non-English, non-Anglo-Saxon slaves that had banded together with Africans to rise up. They made a deal with them. Look, okay, we gonna quit enslaving y'all, and we gonna make y'all the slave patrol. Yeah, and we gonna call y'all white, so that we can distinguish you from these black Africans and whatnot. So now you're white people. Welcome to the club. You are no longer going to be enslaved. Now you can help us enslave these Africans, because, you know, they just animals anyway, and they soulless and whatnot. Yeah, it was a great betrayal, man. A great betrayal. And none of this is being taught that I have seen or heard of in any of these high school history classes. None of that. I only came across the lecture of the invention of the white race in probably the past 2 years. So there's a whole lot of stuff that's incorrect. And here is another thing, and I know this from my personal research here in North Carolina on my family history, or one section of my family. Because, you know, we got many branches in our family trees and whatnot. But as I was doing research on my Cherokee ancestors that, you know, right here, part of the Mississippian nation that existed before these Europeans came over here and started wiping people out and killing people and putting them on reservations and whatnot. But I know that there have always been Africans here, and they were not all enslaved. They were free people. They were free Africans. But it seems like many black people, African descended people, so-called African Americans, have bought into this lie that we all are descendants of enslaved people. We're not. We are not all descendants of people who were enslaved. Your skin color does not mean that you are the descendants of an enslaved African. And people not need to stop assuming that. You should do some research on your family history. The state of North Carolina, from some of the research I have done, and it looks like I am going to be going over the hour, but some of the research I have done on black people here in North Carolina, they sent at least 400 black people, free Africans, not slaves, not enslaved human beings. These were free people. And they sent 400 men to participate in the revolution. That's another thing that doesn't get taught. You watch television, you watch these movies about the Revolutionary War, and you're going to see predominantly white people. When there was a sizable amount of black people, Africans, who also fought in the revolution on both sides. And not all of them were enslaved. Yeah, there was a couple of them, you know, white people, enslavers, who were allowed to send one of their enslaved African males in place because they had a draft. And if they didn't want to go fight for liberty and freedom from the British and all this and that, oh, you could just send one of your enslaved human beings. And I don't know. I can't tell you how they pulled that off, because I wish I would have been enslaved. And you going to send me to fight in your place? Good luck on seeing me again, because I'm not coming back. So I don't know how they pulled that off. And that's played down. So, folks, all I'm saying is 99.9% of the history that the majority of the people in this, in within the confines of the United States, and we might as well say the rest of the world, it's full of lies, white lies, for real. So, you know, I appreciate her taking the initiative to point something out, but actually what you pointed out was you're the one that's incorrect. They didn't call them immigrants. It was just in that section about immigration patterns, global immigration patterns, but they clearly stated that these people were brought here part of the African, the transatlantic slave trade, which I hate saying that phrase too. It was the human trafficking of Africans that was going on. Transatlantic human trafficking of Africans. That's what it should be called. Because them people weren't slaves. They were enslaved. It's a big difference. Calling people slaves is to take a measure of their humanity away. But I understand sometimes we have to use words that people can grasp and understand, because we don't want everything to go over their heads and whatnot. And we can break it down to them later. But yeah. So again, even with this little minor change, it's still leaving in some disinformation about indentured servants, European immigrants, man. Most of the people who brought here, most of the white people classified as white now, were either prisoners of England. They were English citizens, but they had been convicted of some crime. They were the poor commoners and whatnot. Or they were Irish who had been captured, Scottish. And it wasn't until after Bacon's Rebellion in the 1500s that they became white, classified as white. That was the classification. That is when we came up, or they came up with these racial classifications. Before then, you were just known by your people, your nationality. If you belong to a nation, that's how you were referred to. So, again, you know, this book has gone out already. Millions of these books have possibly gone out, at least hundreds of thousands. This is one of the largest publishers. And so they are not recalling them books. And it's not like every year a school district is going to order new books. The updated version. No, that would be a waste of money. I just bought, 100,000 textbooks from you last year. I'm not updating to this next volume that quick. So the damage is already out there, but I would say that the greater damage isn't what she's talking about. The greater damage is that all of the history that they're teaching is a bunch of lies. It may have some truth in there, but there's a distortion of the truth. So, anyway, I have one more story that I want to share. And that is about the rain in South Carolina. Keep Max Parthas, Tribal Rain, his wife. I believe Brother Chris also lives in South Carolina. Y'all keep them in your prayers. Max is like cut off. He's cut off. The roads are washed out and they can't get out. Fortunately, the flood waters did not, rise to the level that it got into the house. But I think he said on Facebook where he was able to make his way to a Wi-Fi hotspot and, provide us with some updates. But I think he said, you know, it came up to the stairs. But it didn't come into the house. So we're thankful for that. We're thankful, that Max and Tribal Rain and their children and relatives and Brother Chris seems to be doing okay, down there. But South Carolina's in bad shape, man, from that hurricane. And I've read that many roads and bridges have washed out and even dams have been breaking. And again, as I stated at the beginning of the program, I have some experience in construction, road work, as well as building bridges. And I remember going to Sardis. That's the first time I've been able to remember that name. Sardis, Georgia. We were down there in Sardis, Georgia. That's the first time that I have seen actual cotton fields. Walked through the cotton field. And I mean, like that's some ugly country down there. Ugly. Cotton fields and whatnot. It was like a swampy like area we was in, and we were about to replace a bridge. Do you know that this bridge was built in 1930? That's 89 years ago. That's 89 years ago. It's been like maybe what 10 years since I last did construction work, and when that I came across that bridge. Hundreds, and you would be surprised that there are a lot of bridges and roads like that in America that are approaching almost a century old. So let me allow y'all to listen to a news report from CNN about what's going on down there, because it's hell down there right now. So let's see. Here's that clip.
South Carolina waking up to lingering fears that more catastrophic flooding and new dam breaches could be on the way.
From the river standpoint, we haven't hit the worst of it yet.
Monday night, 8 dams failing, buckling under the pressure of historic rains. 18 failing since Saturday, some areas seeing more than 20 inches. The deluge to blame for more than a dozen deaths in the Carolinas.
Just because the rain stops does not mean that we are out of the woods.
This road collapsed in Lugoff, claiming the life of a man driving with a female passenger. The vehicle careening through barricades. She survived, pulled from the overturned wreckage amid rushing water. In Ridgeville, a chilling rescue of a different kind. Floodwaters unearthing caskets from a nearby cemetery.
That's somebody's family out there. So, we got to show respect. This is respect. We got to respect the dead.
This man risking his own life, venturing into waist-deep water, pushing a casket to shore. In the hard-hit area of downtown Columbia, the Congaree River peaking to the highest it's been in decades, covering interstate roads, leaving homes underwater, and washing out bridges. Now at least six nearby states sending emergency workers into South Carolina for added flood relief. So far, 1,300 National Guard members are on duty, crews in Black Hawk helicopters leading statewide rescue efforts.
Sad because people have lost their businesses, they've lost homes, and it affected everybody across the board. It did not discriminate.
The devastation prompting President Obama to declare South Carolina a major disaster area, ordering federal aid.
All right, so you just heard that clip from CNN. I'm sorry, something is going on with the internet here. We actually lost power late last night. Now, I live in North Carolina near the South Carolina border, but we did not get hit with that kind of rain, so I don't know what happened last night. About 2 o'clock last night, we lost power. Something's going on, but I just lost internet connection briefly, or something happened to our radio server stream, but I was able to reload the server. I noticed that we weren't streaming on air, so I apologize if you got cut off. We are back on air right now. I can't explain that. I have to do some research later. So anyway, could be my ISP throttling my internet, because we do a lot of streaming and whatnot, and so maybe they trying to cut back on the data that I'm sending over the internet. So that possibly that's more than likely what it is, and I'm gonna have to get in touch with them about that. But anyway, South Carolina's doing bad, y'all. And when I think about all of the billions a year, trillions over decades that the United States gives to all these other countries and whatnot, and it's not cause they trying to help somebody. That's what they tell you and whatnot. No, it's so that they can get them people dependent on that money and to keep them that money flowing in the future. That when the United States calls on them to vote a certain way at the United Nations against this resolution or for that resolution, or, you know, you're going to allow us to put a base in your country to where we can, you know, drone people to death and whatnot. So that's what that aid is really. That's what it's really about. It's about bribery. It ain't about, I feel so sorry for these people and we got so much money that, you know, we got trillions of dollars to just distribute around the world. But, you know, you hear something different when you talking about people here in the United States. Oh, they just a bunch of lazy, you know, people that just want to sit up and off of somebody else's hard work and live off of other people's work and whatnot. And that's what you hear when they talk about their own citizens, as each and every year it seems like they are cutting the social safety net, cutting the SNAP program, you know, cutting TANF and putting all of these different laws into effect that if you are a registered felon, oh, you can't, I mean, not a registered felon, but if you are classified as a felon, you've been to prison, for whatever reason, oh, you can't get no damn food stamps. We know it's hard for you to find a job and whatnot, cause people discriminating against you, but no, you can't have it. You can't get no SNAP benefits. You can't live in any kind of public housing and whatnot. So yeah, we don't really care what happens to you. But yet they got billions and billions of dollars, man, to give out to apartheid countries like Israel, brutal military regimes like Egypt, and, you know, also giving aid to Saudi Arabia. Now, what the hell is you giving Saudi Arabia aid for? Huh? So, in turn, I think that money would be better spent if you started spending it on the infrastructure here in the United States. It makes no sense that you got bridges and dams being washed out because they're in a state of disrepair. because they have been standing for 50 years or longer, and all you've been doing is making a patch here or a patch there. You're not making any significant reinforcements to the structures and whatnot. You know, you just trying to get by and whatnot. So I think that this is evident that America, that the states, I shouldn't say America, the USA Inc., as well as these various states, have been neglecting their infrastructure. Now, all of these people that's out of work, I don't care what the national unemployment rate they say it is, cause, I mean, that's a lie. Because, just because a person's no longer getting unemployment benefits, or they're no longer going to the unemployment office to use the computer to search for a job, that doesn't mean that they have found employment. They just, you know, been cut off from unemployment. Maybe they're going to the library, or they may have internet connection and they looking for jobs like that, or doing door, you know, in-person searches. Just cause they're not going through the system doesn't mean that they are employed. So whenever you hear this, oh, the unemployment rate is 5.6% in the United States, that's a lie. And then if they give you that, let's just say it is accurate. Let's say Charlotte, North Carolina got an unemployment rate of 6%. Well, if you start breaking it down to certain communities like the Hispanic community, like the Black community, you will find that those unemployment rates will be significantly higher than what you call in the average or whatever. And this is a way, and I'm not the first, you know, this has been said before, and I think even President Obama has addressed this and tried to put forth a jobs package that would employ people to go out here and rebuild the infrastructure. But of course, the obstructionist Republicans, and I don't mean to sound like I'm some partisan political guy, but the truth is the truth. They oppose this man on everything simply cause he's Black. He's non-white. They oppose him on everything. They're talking about they don't want to do no, they don't want to, do any more spending and all that. We can't, you know, be spending all this money. Look at the deficit. But damn, they ain't, damn sure ain't telling that to Israel that's getting about $1 billion a year. They ain't telling that to Egypt that's getting $1 billion a year. They're not telling that to any of these other countries. Look, we got a huge deficit here. We would like to help, but we can't help. And we have been, we can't neglect our citizens to take care of it, the entire world. So, you know, I'm sorry, when we're in a better financial place, we might be able to resume that assistance. No, you're not hearing that, because they don't look at that as being assistance to those people. They looking at it as being a bribe so that they then can get favors and, you know, yeah. We want you to fight the drug war. If you don't fight the drug war, we're taking that money back. We are going to cut off all of this U.S. taxpayer dollars that you've been getting to fight the drug war, to spend on military grade equipment and whatnot. No, no. See? Or we want you to, allow us to put military bases all over your place and we'll consider that as a fair trade and whatnot. You give us the bases and we give you this money. So it's not like they really trying to aid anyone, man. Let any of those leaders talk about we not down with your agenda. Just like the people in Uganda who said, you know, we think homosexuality is a crime, and so we gonna lock up people. Now, whether or not that's wrong or right, which I don't think that's right to be locking up people cause of homosexuality, they homosexuals or whatever. I tend to live and let live as long as what you doing ain't impacting me or impacting my children, or, you know, when it starts impacting my children or whatnot, then we gonna have a problem. But long as you stay in your household, do what you do, I stay in my household. I don't think that people should be locked up, but apparently people in Uganda do. They like, we putting your behind in prison and we catch you engaged in sodomy and whatnot, we putting you in prison. Well, what did the United States? Okay, we'll cut off your aid then. We will disqualify you from getting this aid package that we've been giving you every year if you don't repeal that law criminalizing homosexuality. So that's really what that aid is for, people. Now, when the Republicans say, even though they are using it incorrectly and they're just being assholes and whatnot, when they say that, you know, the, like, for example, who was that that said, Jeb Bush talking about black people voting for Democrats because they'll get free stuff. You know, that is just so asinine for him to say something like that. But that is really what they will say, that, you know, we on the Democratic plantation, we hooked on welfare. They don't want you to get off of welfare, when the fact is the majority of people on so-called welfare are white. And I don't look as being on welfare as something bad. Most of the fraud that I see going on in terms of welfare, Medicaid, stuff like that, that is doctors, hospitals, caregivers. Most of the stories I have seen on that kind of fraud, it ain't individuals. Certainly there are individuals who are doing it, but it's not widespread as they would make it out to be, to justify cutting the social safety net. If a person needs help, they should get help. And it's not like, you know, you providing them with any jobs, rebuilding the infrastructure. So, you know, they need help. I'd rather they get a SNAP card than be out here at the grocery store waiting on me to come out to rob me of my groceries and any cash I got. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's what the Republicans say. But we can apply that accurately to the aid that they're giving to these other countries. They want to get them hooked on that. They want to get them used to getting that money and depending on that money so that they can then, you know, call in that favor when the time arises, or to coerce them into doing what they want them to do. So, yeah, that's what's going on. But South Carolina, keep South Carolina and any other areas affected by this hurricane in your thoughts, prayers. Send good vibrations out there. Remember, we got members of the Black Talk Radio Network family in that area, so we definitely want to be thinking about them. All right, that brings an end to today's broadcast. I will be back on air, not with Black Talk Radio News, but I'll be on air at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time with an episode of New Abolitionist Radio. As far as I know, we hope that Max will be able to join us, but he's like saying, you know, things are powers intermittent, and he doesn't know yet. But hopefully he'll be able to host the program. Of course, I help co-host as well as Brother Yohanan Elijah. So if Max isn't there, the program will go on. So make sure y'all check us out tomorrow at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And also check out blacktalkradionetwork.com. We have media partners that are heard not only on this station, but we got independent black media producers running their own digital radio stations and posting podcasts and whatnot, and posting updates and letting you know when they have a live program coming on. So most definitely subscribe to blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you're on Facebook, follow us on Facebook. Just type in the Facebook search engine, Black Talk Radio Network, and we all, or on Twitter at Black Talk Radio. And we are, every time there is a post, it gets sent out, to the social network. So that will help you to, be up to date with what is going on the network. All right. With that said, recognize the fact that you live behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc., that America is a battlefield. All right, casualties are being created every day because, according to killedbypolice.net, we have seen thus far, oh, I ain't even finished the program, and they already done killed another one. So the first one killed today that we know of, Omar Ali, 27 years old, a male. And I guess O, I don't know what O stands for. Is that Oriental? I don't think so. I don't know. what the O stands for. So, but anyway, this person been killed. Omar Ali, 27 years old, killed in Ohio. So again, like I just said, casualties are being created every day. 908 that we know of in 2015 thus far, on pace for 1400 to 1500 people. So now that you know that we ain't playing, that this is indeed a reality, it's worse than a battlefield out there. The battlefields that I have been on when I was in the military, we wasn't seeing these kind of casualties during the Gulf War. No. This many people ain't been killed in Afghanistan or Iraq. Not American citizens, so most of the killing is going on right here. So once you recognize these things as being facts, you will develop codification. Hopefully, can't force you to, but you should. Or you will also develop some skills, some battlefield awareness, so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become one of these casualties. We don't want you to become a casualty. We don't want to see anyone get enslaved. And so you just need to develop that skill that will lessen the likelihood that it will happen to you. But there are no guarantees. All right. Until tomorrow, again, Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. So until tomorrow, peace and blessings to all.
Don't. Here's what I want you all to do for me.
Bang. What you looking for? The same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the roll below the level, cause I'm living low next to the base.
Come on.
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal. But now I wonder how. Some people never know. The enemy could be the Frank Guardian. I'm now a hooligan. I rock the party and clear all the madness. I'm not a racist priest to teach the
officer. Cause some they never had this.
Number one, never wanna run about the gun. I wasn't licensed to have one. The minute they see me, fear me. I'm the epitome of public enemy.